Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to episode 51 of Growth Marketing Today. I'm your host, Ramley John, and I'm here on a mission to help founders and marketers sharpen their marketing skills by talking to today's top experts. Today, I had the pleasure of talking to Val Geisler. She is dubbed the email marketing queen. How amazing is that? Now, with a client list of companies such as AWeber, Buffer, Stripe, AppKeys, Envision, and more, Vi Geisler has cracked the code to email marketing strategy that actually increases conversion. The last onboarding emails that she rewrote saw a 209% increase in conversions. She is going to drop some awesome email knowledge bombs in this episode. In episode 51, Vi Geisler shares two of her biggest pet peeves when it comes to onboarding emails that you should avoid. Second, Val's dinner party strategy for high converting onboarding emails. And number three, she's going to talk about her new company, Fix My Churn, and three retention strategies that actually help you grow your revenue. Now, I have created a growth cheat sheet with Val's exact step-by-step email onboarding strategy and three retention strategies. Why take notes? You can just steal mine. I don't get it. I've been putting this together for the last five episodes, and I thought there would be more people downloading it. So get it. Get my notes. Steal it from me. Download it at growthtoday.fm/51, or you can click on the link in the bottom. Now, heads up, this will only be up until July 30th, Tuesday, July 30th, when I release the next episode. So get it now at growthtoday.fm/51. Now, please support this podcast. I'm not sure if you know, this podcast is a one-man show. I record, edit, and create all my marketing materials for this podcast. So I've created three ways to support this. First, share a quote on Twitter or LinkedIn. Go to growthtoday.fm/51. I make it super easy for you to share that on Twitter or LinkedIn. Tell a friend. Tell them, hey, listen to Growth Marketing Today. Second, join the Growth Today tribe. Join the Growth Today tribe. You'll get a cheat sheet directly emailed to you. I'll also tell you who my next guests are, and you can email me questions that I'll ask them during the episode. And third, finally, support me on Patreon with as little as $2 per episode. Starting in August, you'll get exclusive access like a personal handwritten thank you note with stickers mailed to you from me. And I'm actually going to handwrite that. Early access to podcasts one day before the release. Access to all the growth cheat sheets I've created so far. I'm going to go back all 51 episodes. I'm going to try to put together the cheat sheets. I'm still working through that. Access to a private Growth Today Tribe Slack group. You can listen in live to podcasts all for less than $2 per episode. So my goal is to raise $200 per episode so I can focus all my energy on finding more amazing guests and putting together some smart questions from the community so we can all learn together about marketing as founders and marketers. You can go to patreon.com/growthtoday to check that out. The first 20 patrons, I will thank you in every episode for the rest of the year. So with that, I actually got my first patron last week. I just tweeted about it and I got my first one, which is pretty sweet. I want to thank my first patron, Jamie Ward from Las Vegas. Thank you for being an early adopter. I really appreciate you sending my love all the way there in Las Vegas. Enough about me. Let's jump in. Let's listen on my chat with Val. Hey, everybody. I have Val, the email queen. I'm pretty excited to talk to her about everything about email, churn, and all that she's doing that's new, that's coming up. How's it going, Val? How is your morning?
Oh, so good. I'm happy to be here now. you know, running around doing the kid drop off and getting the day started can be a like thrown into the fire kind of way to start the day. And then getting to sit down and talk to you is kind of a nice little reset for halfway through my morning. So it's nice to be talking to you right now.
Thank you. That's great. I've had my morning coffee. Are you a coffee person or a tea person?
Tea. Yeah, I do tea. And I'm a little slow today, so I had a matcha this morning.
Nice.
Yeah.
Like the one that you make from scratch, like Japanese style?
Yeah, and I make it at home. I make it myself. So I'm particular about the way I like it. So
Have you been to Japan?
I have not. I really would love to go.
I've done the Japanese tea ceremony, and it's really fascinating how that whole thing is put together.
It's so specific. You know, I mean, it's probably doesn't compare it at all, but I've been to England and done like high tea in England. And there's a very specific way that operates. So I'm going to Ireland in August. So I experience Irish tea. I don't know if that's a thing. I assume it is. But we'll find out.
And you're going to be there for Learn Inbound, I'm guessing?
For Learn Inbound, yeah. I'm speaking there on specialization because that's something that I'm really passionate about for freelancers and for in-house marketers. I think it's so valuable to specialize and to really make a name for yourself in a particular area. And as in both cases, being a generalist, it can be valuable early in your career, but as you start to feel drawn towards a particular area, whether you're in-house or freelancing, you know, choosing that path and it helps in so many ways. So it helps your clients or your potential, you know, people hiring you know what they are hiring you for, whether again, in-house or freelancers. And then it also helps you because you don't have to know all the things. You get to just learn a lot about what you love learning about. So it's such a nice, it's a break to specialize, and you get to do what you really love to do. And so I'm speaking to the Learn Inbound community about specialization and, what it's done for me and what it can do for them.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about how you became the email queen that Gia calls you. I looked at your profile. You started off as a theater design grad. And how did you become this really sought after email and digital strategist?
Well, that makes sense, right? You're graduating with a theater degree and then working in digital marketing. I mean, let's go hand in hand. I have a friend, Natalie Lussier. She runs Access Ally, a membership platform. And she says that, your career isn't necessarily like a ladder. That's one direction. You know, she calls it a spiral staircase, that you're kind of always going up. So you're always heading in the same direction, but the view looks a little bit different each step of the way. And I really love that analogy. I'm a big fan of analogies and metaphors. And I really like that because it feels so true. I mean, I don't know very many people who are, I was just thinking the other day, I graduated college in 2004 and it's 2019 now. So, coming up on, 15 years, if I can do math right, just over 15 years of working. And in, anyone who has done a decade plus of work, I don't know very many people who have done the same thing the whole time. That's just not the way our society operates very much anymore. While I still very much have a passion for theater and the work that's done there. And I also know that the skills translate into so many different arenas. So I worked in theater, I worked in live events. So I worked for a botanical garden doing weddings. We did over 300 weddings a year. So it's an insane amount of weddings because we had multiple gardens. So on a weekend, there could be, a dozen weddings across the different gardens, both Saturday and Sunday. And so we would do a lot. And through that, I learned a lot about managing expectations and working with different types of people and organization and communication. And all of that leveraged into a career. I worked for Lululemon Athletica, which is a retail brand.
Canadian brand.
Canadian brand. when I started with Lululemon, very few people in the States knew about Lulu. Like most people that knew about it were Canadian or, you know, had a Canadian family member or something. So it was a little bit of a cult brand at the time. Now it's a lot more mainstream. But, you know, the job there was largely centered around events. How are we tying the community together? What are we doing with the fitness community as a whole? Less so about selling pants. Selling pants was a byproduct of creating events and supporting the fitness community around us. So, you know, again, it's like, okay, well, theater translated into special events translated into this retail management because it's centered around events. And it was there that I really learned to run a business because they teach entrepreneurship. Really, as a store manager, you get a budget, you get the product, and that you do everything. I chose where my store was going to be. I hired all of my team myself. I decided how we spent our budget every single month. It was great. I had someone else's money to play with, but ultimately I got the I got to decide how we used it. So I learned a lot about accountability there and, you know, what a P&L is, how to run a business. And then from there, you know, I was able to start my own business. And that's something that is a value of that brand is to go out and take what you learn in the company and take it out into the world. If you want to work for them forever, there's a path for that. But if you want to do other things and impact the world in a different way, there's a path for that as well. So, so I really learned to go out and build my own business, which I did. Let's see, it was like 2011, something like that. And I started off as a virtual assistant without even knowing what that was. I had a bunch of friends who ran businesses and they kept complaining about these things that they had to do that they didn't want to be doing. And it took them away from doing their best work. And I just thought, well, I know how to do that, or I know how to Google how to do that. And so I just offered them, you know, I had a handful of friends and I said, hey, can I do this for you? Would you pay me for this? And they said yes. And I was able to replace my salary and go and work on my own. And I learned a lot of lessons along the way. The business grew and changed over time. It led to an in-house marketing role at an email service provider. And then that's where I really honed my email skills and all my expertise in that area, which has translated into what I do today. So it's definitely a spiral staircase, a long winding road. But, you know, I really don't think that I would be doing what I do today if I hadn't done all those other things.
That's great. I'm going to take that email, that staircase idea, because I've been calling it zigzag, like a career zigzag in the podcast. That's why I love asking this question is like when I was early on in my career, I thought it was like linear. You go from something in the bottom to manager, then CMO and then CEO, like something that people think is like a ladder. I saw on Twitter that you recently launched fixmychurn.com. First of all, congrats. I saw the website. It looks great.
Oh, thank you.
How did that come about? Like how did you go from just doing this on your own and then now putting this new thing together?
Yeah. So Fix My Churn was really born out of the problems that I was solving for my clients over the last 2 years. So when I left my in-house role, I was basically doing that thing I just talked about of being a generalist because I was, you know, I wasn't new to running a business, but I was new to running this type of business. And I was a generalist marketer. I took on any client I could to do any kind of marketing work that I could do. And because that's where my skill set really was in the digital space. And so in taking on all these different things, I started to feel myself pulled towards the world of email. When people would ask about email projects, I would I would say yes. And then when I had clients who I was doing lots of different things for, when we get the chance to work on an email project, I was so excited. And I just kept feeling this pull toward email. And so I decided to listen to that, that little tiny voice that said, do more email. And I kind of simultaneously, I started following now a good friend of mine, Philip Morgan. And Philip Morgan teaches specialization for freelance web developers. He has an awesome podcast and email list. I think the podcast is currently on hiatus, but there's like tons of old backlog episodes you can listen to. It's called the Consulting Pipeline Podcast. And he has an amazing email list with a free specialization email course that I joined. At least that did exist when I joined his list a year and a half ago. And I learned as much as I could about specialization from him. I knew that I could take the word developer and replace it with marketer, and apply a lot of the same concepts. Like 90% of it applied to me. I mean, there were the occasional emails that just didn't apply at all, but the lessons are the same. And so I dove deep into specializing and redid my website, focused 100% on email and what I could do for people through email, focused on my particular client, learned about horizontal versus vertical specialization. There's so much that you can go into with specialization. And I got really specific where I said, I'm doing email marketing for B2C software companies who are interested in increasing their MRR.
That's great.
Either through increasing conversions or reducing churn or both, right? So it's not, for me, it's not about that top of the funnel, pulling in a ton of new customers. That's not how I'm helping them increase MRR. It's through increasing conversions of customers who are already on free trials or have had a trial at one point and never converted, and then reducing customer churn through retention efforts. And all of that is centered around email. So when I got into this specialization more and more over the last year and a half, I've realized that the problem people really are trying to solve is churn. Mm-hmm. So I had a little bit of this Trojan horse theory, and I wrote about it when I launched Fix My Churn. I wrote about it on the blog that there's a funny little GIF that I created on there, or I guess it's a meme that I created on there that kind of illustrates this theory. But, when I was doing email previously, people got to know me because I cared a lot about onboarding. Mm. Customer onboarding is so important, and the way that you onboard your customers really does matter. And so many people are doing it wrong.
Yeah.
So I spent 6 months writing onboarding teardowns on my blog, where I'd go get emails from other companies and then collect all those emails, and I have screenshots of them, and I would say what worked and what didn't. And I just shared basically what I would do if someone was a client, but just kind of picked them out of the world of the internet and put them on my blog. So sharing my opinion made people sit up and pay attention. And then talking about onboarding, everybody knows that's like a tangible thing. Okay, we need to do better onboarding. We know that. So then people would come to me for that. But it was my Trojan horse, because what I really wanted to talk to people about was their customer churn. But I knew that we couldn't talk about retention and churn efforts until we dealt with the onboarding problem. So that's where, I was finally able to, after, a year and a half of focusing solely on onboarding, finally able to leverage that into, okay, well, what I really am here to talk about is churn. And now that you guys know that, let's just put it out in the open. I also recognize the value in leveraging the specialists around me. And so Fix My Churn is able to be a team of people who can support clients and bring all of their individual expertise to a project. So if we need to make the help docs better, then we have a team member for that. If we need to work on emails, we have team for that. If we need to do a ton of customer interviews, we have team for that. Mm-hmm. So really able to leverage a team now to make the churn problem not necessarily go away, because it shouldn't ever go away. That's part of the fun of software. If you only have the exact same clients all the time, customers all the time, it's kind of boring. But yeah, we're not necessarily aiming for zero churn, but definitely reducing your churn and all the while increasing the conversions too.
That's great. It's funny you talked about that Trojan horse. I saw that blog post. I'll link it. That GIF was funny. But I just had a guest, Josh Garofalo from Sway Copy.
Yeah.
He did say his Trojan horse was copywriting word for word. And I'm not sure if you read your blog post. And his end goal is really positioning and marketing strategy. So just brought that up in mind. I did see also your onboarding email teardowns. I really love it. And you mentioned that a lot of companies are doing it wrong. So curious, what are some of your biggest pet peeves when it comes to onboarding emails?
Never sending any emails is the first really? One. This happens so often. You get a welcome email. Hey, thanks for signing up.
Goodbye.
So glad you're here. And then nothing until like the day before your trial ends.
That's crazy.
Maybe a halfway point check-in. But even halfway, if it's a 30-day trial, 15 days later, you have completely forgotten that you signed up for something at all.
Yeah.
So not communicating with your customers. And I think that in talking to different founders and people charged with marketing as well, they're afraid of bothering people. That's what I hear a lot is, well, I don't want to bother people. And especially if somebody has a paid first 30 days, right? Like a lot of software companies will have a paid trial where you can get your money back if you write in at the end of your 30 days and say, I don't want to do this anymore, but you're committing to paying for that first month. So there's no free trial. Especially in that case, founders are worried about scaring them away by talking to them and reminding them that they're paying for something that they aren't using. So I see that a lot, and it makes me crazy because I feel like our job in customer onboarding is to teach our customers new habits, new ways of being. One of the most impactful books that I have read in the last several years, at least in regards to a lot of things, but that's not meant to be a book about customer onboarding, but is one, is Atomic Habits by James Clear.
Yeah, I read it. Great.
It's a fantastic read for onboarding because that's the goal of onboarding, is to create a new habit with your customer. So showing up where they are, which is in their inbox, because they're not remembering to come to your app even 5 minutes after they signed up for it, because they probably, somebody told them to sign up for it, or they heard a podcast ad, or they, you know, clicked on something and they said, oh, free trial, 30 days. Okay, I'll start using it later this week. And they'll sign up real quick and they'll click into another tab and do something else and completely forget about it. You have to email them because that's where everybody is all the time.
Right.
You have to show up where they are and help them learn new habits, new ways of being. Yeah, not showing up at all drives me crazy. And probably something that you've talked with Josh and other people about is the idea of companies that talk about themselves all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not the customers.
Right.
From an onboarding perspective as well, and really retention and everything too, we have to stop talking about features all the time.
Yes, please.
Yes, please. Because when all you do is talk about the features, the customer has no idea why that matters to them.
Mm.
Especially when they're brand new to the product. You know, if they don't know what it means or why it matters to them, they're not going to feel connected to it. You know, you have to start with them and the why, and you can talk about features through the lens of, you have said this is important to you and this is why we built this. And this is the benefit it's going to give you. So it's not just like, we created an invoicing software. Great. Nobody cares. Nobody wants an invoicing software. They want to get paid faster.
Yeah.
They want to make sure that their clients, have an easy way to get paid. They don't want to spend back and forth emails talking about money because freelancers don't like to talk about money, which is a whole other problem. But you know, that's what they want. And you don't know any of that until you interview your customers and talk to them and know more about them and understand why they are hiring your product.
That's so good. I think, yeah, that second part is the one that annoys me a lot. A lot of emails are like, hey, you should use this feature. Here's another feature. And I'm like,
why?
Cool. Yeah, why? Like, how does it help me, right?
And in the onboarding phase, when you're brand new to a product, if a product is saying to you, every single day, you're getting an email with 5 or 6 features shown in that email, all of a sudden you're getting really overwhelmed by, wow, there's a lot of features in this product and I don't know that I'm going to be able to get the most out of it. And I have this 14-day trial and you're telling me there's 36 features to check out. I don't know that I'm going to be able to get to all of them. So I'm probably just going to not do anything. Because we as humans have this tendency to, if we see a whole lot of possibility, we do nothing.
Right.
But if we see a little bit and one step at a time, then it's easier to do. You know, it's that one foot in front of the other. Mm. If you think about running a marathon and, you know, you can actually see the finish line, how far away it is, you will never run that whole thing. But if you think about running the first mile and then the second and then the third, it's a lot easier to do. I'm not a marathon runner, so that's a terrible analogy for me to use because I've never done it. But it's a lot more realistic to think about running a mile than to run 26.
And talking about onboarding, I saw a workshop you did for Forget the Funnel with Gia and Claire about the dinner party strategy for high converting onboarding emails. Can you talk a little bit about that? And I saw the guide there. I'm going to link it in the notes in the bottom as well.
So the idea is with customer onboarding, like I said, people aren't sending enough emails more often than not. So if they are sending emails, they're really features focused. Mm. So the dinner party strategy is designed to solve that problem. It's a series of emails that you can use for your welcome series. The guide that you mentioned, you can grab it. I know you said you'll link it, but you can also grab it at valgeisler.com/TDPS nice. For the dinner party strategy. It's a PDF of in this walkthrough of the different emails that you need in your onboarding sequence to have a really big impact on your customers. And you know, you think about having people over to your house for dinner or having been to a dinner party. Maybe you aren't a host, but almost everyone has been to a dinner party or hosted one. And if you went to a dinner party and were greeted at the door with the steak on a plate and a fork and knife and somebody saying like, hey, you're here, go ahead and eat right here. You know, it's winter and you've a coat on and you're like, what's going on? Can I come in the house first? Can I have to go to the bathroom. Can you, is there anything to drink? You know, you need to give people a chance to come into your home, to get to know where everything is, to feel comfortable. And then, you know, once everyone's arrived and you've had appetizers and you've had some chit chat and getting to know each other, then you sit down to the meal and you dive into the main dish and the side dishes. And unless you're at some kind of like regressive dinner, you don't serve dessert first. So you have dessert after the meal. And then hopefully if everyone has enjoyed themselves, you invite them to come back. And so all of those steps along the way relate to your onboarding emails and the strategy behind it, because you want to do the same thing. You don't want to be shoving your features in their faces the second that they arrive. You want to give them a chance to breathe and to figure out, get their bearings and start to build those habits again. So yeah, the dinner party strategy is something that I think works really well. Everyone who downloads it emails me and says like, hey, I'm putting this into place in our company or in my own business. And, you know, it's a good framework to get you started or to get you restarted if you feel like maybe you're onboarding needs a fresh take.
So I'll definitely link that in the show notes, valgeisler.com/TDPS.
That's right.
Now, you say that a lot of companies don't send enough emails. What is a good frequency? And I'm guessing that it depends, but what does it depend on?
The world famous answer for email marketing is it depends. You have to test it. It depends on the length of the trial, if it is a trial. It depends on, you know, the depth of the product, the customer themselves, what the product is used for. All of those things are factored into the amount of emails. For example, I have a client right now that built an email sequence for, and they have a forever free trial. So you have a free account, but really limited features until you upgrade to a paid account. So you could have a free account forever. But the goal obviously is to upgrade to a paid account, at least from the company's perspective. So we built 10 days straight of daily emails for the first 10 days of onboarding. And the goal is, because they are also bringing in tons and tons of new customers every single day, so their top of funnel is really heavy. And then they get all these people stuck on the free account who really could benefit from a paid account, but they're just not seeing where that benefit is. So what we're doing over the course of 10 days is educating their customer on how to, so their customer's end goal is to publish something, right? So they're getting to publish. And so we're doing education along those 10 days to get them to that point of having that thing published, right? So if what we did over those 10 days was send 3 emails over 10 days, then we wouldn't be supporting them in actually getting anything done. But by breaking it down and saying, like, do this 2-minute thing today, we'll do a 3-minute thing tomorrow, then we'll do a 1-minute thing, and then we'll do a 5-minute thing. And in 10 days, you'll have this done. We're telling them, you know, their time matters. We're helping them walk along each step. All those things that we discovered in our customer interviews, we're putting into practice in the email sequence. And then things start to we spread things out a bit more after those first 10 days. But the goal in those 10 days is to get them to publish or to get them to go away. because it's okay for customers to go away. If they aren't a good fit for you or your brand, it's totally okay for them to go away. Or unsubscribe. If they say, you know what, I want to keep my free account, I don't need all this education, and I'm just going to hang out here, then they can just unsubscribe too, and that's okay.
You talked about customer interviews, and I know you do also have a customer interview coming up after this podcast recording.
Yeah.
What particular insight are you looking for? Is there a set of questions that you love asking during customer interviews?
Yeah.
Or is it totally different for each and different businesses that you work with?
So the questions are built around a framework called jobs to be done. So what I'm looking for in these interviews is, what is the job that they have hired this product to do? Someone doesn't hire, like we talked about invoicing software, someone doesn't hire an invoicing software because they really love invoices. They hire an invoicing software to get paid. And there's maybe even a deeper reason behind that. Why do they want to get paid? So that's, we want to get at those really deep reasons. Why do they want to get paid? Because they want to make a living from their business, what is the problem around getting paid? You know, so they say, well, I just want to get paid. Well, what's the problem? I get paid, but you know, it takes 3 emails back and forth and lots of reminders, and then they can't find the link in the invoice. They don't know how to pay it. Right. So you get to this deeper problem of, like, well, we want to get paid as fast as possible because, you know, we don't want to, like, go back and forth through email. We don't want to have to resend invoices. And we really want to spend our time doing our best work and serving our clients. And we found that when we're spending all of our time talking about the invoice, it feels like it takes away from the work that we're doing, right? So you find these things out through customer interviews. So I use the jobs to be done framework because it gets at that. Mm-hmm. The questions are not always exactly the same, because really with jobs to be done interviews, you aren't asking a, like, you aren't checking off a list of questions to ask. You're having a conversation.
Right.
And so there's a lot of like, tell me more about that. Wait, let's go back. You said this thing. I want to dig into that a little bit more. What did you mean by that? A lot of that kind of conversation and really active listening. So if you want to do strong jobs to be done style interviews, learning about listening is really crucial. And not enough of us know how to listen.
I want to switch shift gears a bit and talk about churn. I know that's something that you've really been focusing on. I read somewhere that a lot of companies, that 44% of companies focus more on acquisition, and only 18% cited retention and churn as a higher concern. Why should founders and marketers, especially SaaS, care about retention and churn?
Well, depending on your pricing structure, you could very well have a pricing structure where as your customers grow, you grow. Right. So this happens a lot in the email marketing software world. Right. So a lot of ESPs pricing plans are built around how many subscribers they have. If I have a set number of customers on a mid-tier plan and they have just under 10,000 subscribers, well, if I can help them grow their business and move onto the next plan, if 100 of them move up to the next plan because they breached that 10,000 subscriber mark and now they're in a new pricing plan, that grows my monthly MRR too.
Right.
And the other thing is it does is it creates a really strong customer loyalty, because you've now, as a company, helped them grow their brand. So when the new shiny object software comes along, because it always does, they, even if that other software is cheaper, even if it has features that they want and you don't have, they will likely stay with you because you have become a valuable asset to their company. And I have seen this happen. I have seen people, and you know, you likely see it on, you know, on Twitter and Facebook groups and Slack teams. People talk about like, yeah, they have a feature that seems pretty cool, but I don't feel a connection with that brand, yeah. Or I really like these other things that, you know, where I am is doing. And so when you can build a personal human connection with your customers and help them grow, it helps build that bond. And it also can, you know, with the right kind of pricing in place, you can grow your own MRR through their growth.
That's exactly what I talked with Corey Haynes, head of growth at Barrymetrics. He talked about how a lot of SaaS companies are not really focusing on revenue expansion, like what you talked about. How do I get my customers to succeed so they move on to the next layer or next tier, essentially, in pricing?
Yeah, Corey and I talk about this all the time because, and Barrymetrics has a really cool cancellation tool, insights tool, to better understand why people are canceling so that you can be more proactive about that and, you know, be on the offense and get ahead of it. And they built that because it, you know, more companies need to be focused on retaining the customers you already have. I mentioned this in the blog post when I launched Fix My Churn, that, you know, when I was in my in-house role, we looked around and said, what if we didn't get any new customers? What would we do? How would we build this business? And that's a really good question to ask yourself. You know, what if we did no marketing at all and actually like turned off incoming customers? If we said, nope, we're not going to take any new customers right now, how would we reach our financial goals if we had no new customers coming in the door? And the way that you do that is through growing your existing customers in their businesses and growing your own MRR through that. And maybe your pricing isn't built in a way where their growth equals your growth. I'm not saying you should change your pricing, but you know, there are other opportunities too, where helping your customers, building a personal connection with them, building a relationship, helps them become advocates for you. You know, I've seen companies where they say like, we don't have a sales team because our customers are our sales team. They're telling other business owners, they're telling their friends, they're telling other, you know, other people, they're talking about our product all the time. And that's how we get new customers, is through referrals and through affiliate programs. And so that's something we help with too, is help build out those partner programs, from either building out something that maybe you have like a very passive affiliate program set up, like, yeah, sure, here's a link and you get 10% off your whatever if you share this link. But there's a whole program that can be built around that to really support that partner program. And so that's something we do at Fix My Churn as well, is help build out partner and referral programs for affiliates and to help drive new leads through that personal connection.
Let's talk about that. I've worked with some companies that tried implementing affiliate and referral program. It totally flopped and fizzled out. Like you said, oh, here's 10%.
Yeah.
What is your playbook, or what is your strategy for launching an affiliate and referral program that actually rocks?
Yeah, well, I think that you need to start with a beta group. So selecting your kind of top power users, the people who are already sending people your way, and test everything out with them before you open the floodgates, as it were. And in testing with them, you want to empower them. So we write marketing materials for you to give to your affiliates. We give you email copy to announce the program. We give you email copy for them to share with their audiences. We give you ideas for promotions. You have to continually talk to those affiliates and create new promotion opportunities for them. And the other side of that is that you have to get ahead of that. So if you tell an affiliate, oh, hey, next week we're going to have a big sale. You know, depending on the industry, a lot of affiliates have things planned out for 6-12 months at a time, because they're not just promoting you, they're promoting other things, including their own stuff. So giving them a calendar, and that's, you know, those are the kinds of things that we build out for companies we work with, is having a real solid program built out, and including, you know, are we providing any kind of bonus structure for affiliates? What kind of rewards do they win at different levels of the program? Really actually building a true program, and not just a signing up for an affiliate app and linking your app to it and giving them their custom link and hoping for the best. That does lead to it fizzling out or being pretty lackluster. But you can always revive that program. You can always make it better. So if that's what you have in place, you can definitely amp it up. And if you have nothing in place, then you can start from scratch the right way.
Let's talk about other retention strategies. You were talking about that. I also saw one of your latest workshops with Forget the Funnel, and you talked about three retention strategies.
Yeah.
That marketers can put into place. Can you talk a little bit about that, or other retention strategies that you see are really working for SaaS companies?
Yeah, I mean, being human, so that building that relationship, even in B2B, it's funny, and Corey and I talked about this. I did a workshop for Baremetrics recently, and somebody asked, like, okay, well, that's nice, but what about B2B? And we kind of laughed, because it's like, well, B2B, it's still a person. There's still a human being that's reading your emails, or made the decision to purchase the software, is the end user. And so it's still a human being. Just because you're selling to another business doesn't mean there aren't people in that business. So adding human elements back in, taking away this like very formal brand to brand kind of thing, but just being human and creating connections. And then in that particular Forget the Funnel, we talked a lot about reactivating canceled customers. And so meaning like people who had a trial and never converted, those are really great people to come back to, especially as your product grows or you add new features, reaching back out to them and saying like, hey, I know you requested this feature and we'd love to talk about it because we actually just built it. And even if you have moved on, maybe we can talk about how we can, bring you back, or if you're still looking for something, we'd love to get you in the right place. This actually happened recently with a client of mine that they were looking for a new ESP, and right at the exact time that they were looking, an ESP they had talked to a year ago, but was missing a particular feature, emailed them and said, hey, we built that feature that you specifically requested. And they were like, whoa, we actually, that was the one thing holding us back from switching to you. We're currently looking for a new provider. And we thought that you didn't have that still. So we were not moving forward with investigating you as a potential solution. And now that's actually where they're moving, just because that email was sent. So it's as simple as that, like following up with, we all tag in our customer success teams. We tag tickets as feature request, but then who looks at those? Who goes back into those when a feature is launched and pull that tag and say, who requested this particular feature? And let's reach out to them, even if they're canceled customers, and see what we can do to bring them back in. Paying attention to the customers you've already attracted at one point. I call them zombie customers because they're still out there.
Yeah.
Definitely, unless they're a vampire, somebody who like sucked the life out of your team and you never want to see again. Zombies are really great customers to try to win back, for sure.
I love those terms. I don't know how you come up. You make marketing fun.
Like, oh, thanks. Well, I just try to make it relatable. I mean, again, I wasn't formally trained in marketing. I don't have a business background. And I know that a lot of people don't, and certainly our customers don't.
Right.
So if we can talk to them in a human way and tell stories, and maybe I get some of that from my theater experience, but I just try to make it relatable and help people understand.
That brought up a quote that I heard once from a marketer. His name is Billy Jean, owns an agency in San Diego. And somebody asked him, what's the difference between B2B and B2C marketing? And it's like, I don't do either of those. I do human marketing.
So yeah. Oh, really, I love
quote.
That.
Yeah, that's a good quote.
Yeah.
I know I'm trying to be respectful of your time. I just have two more questions. The first one is, if you had one advice to give to marketers or any SaaS founders out there about email retention or anything you want to talk about, what would be that one advice?
Don't be afraid to email people.
So good.
Because I think more often than not, people are afraid of bothering people. And the fact of the matter is, we've been chatting for almost an hour now. I probably have at least 10 new emails in my inbox. And in another hour, I'll have forgotten about those 10 emails. Unless you're emailing people multiple times a day, they're likely not going to get annoyed by you.
That's good. Yeah, that's a good way. Even when people are reaching out, asking for advice, especially early on in the career, I think just taking the bold step to ask for help. Somebody with more experience.
For sure.
Last question. What is your call to action to my listeners? Where do you want them to go? Any particular site or Twitter or LinkedIn page or whatever you want them to go to?
Sure. So if you are interested in that dinner party strategy that we talked about, there's that download you can grab at, again, it's valgeisler.com/TDPS. And you will get added to my email list from there and be able to keep up with what we do at Fix My Churn. So that's the other place you can come is fixmychurn.com and learn more about us there. And the third place, if you don't want to do either of those, is I'm always on Twitter at @LoveValGeisler. And you can find me there. I would love to hear from you if you listen to the show and want to say hi. Come say hi and let me know what you thought. And that's where we met originally, was on Twitter. And I've met some of my greatest internet friends on Twitter. And then I get to go to conferences and see them in real life. And it's fun. So I'd love to meet you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey, hey, welcome to the end. Thank you for staying all the way here. I want to give you value, and that's what Val's talking about, is really providing value to folks. So my value to you for listening all the way here, I'm going to share with you my three key takeaways from this episode. First, don't be afraid to email your customers. It's absolutely crazy when I heard Val tell me a lot of companies don't email their customers. Email is one of the highest ROI when it comes to channels. Remember that people who sign up for your app forget so easily why they sign up. I signed up for this app and I totally forgot why I did. You need to remind them of the value. Now, a lot of folks, they're afraid to email because they don't want to bother them. Remember, focus on the value. And that's my second point, is stop being me focused. Too many emails are all about your products and your futures and your company and you. One of the best books I've read is How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. One of his tips is be interesting. And how you do that is read magazines and books. And because you do that, you have an opportunity to talk to people about what they're really interested about. When you do that, you become more human and they're more likely to convert and stick with you for a long time, even when there's something shinier out there. And third, fix your churn, man. Reducing churn doesn't just solve a retention problem. It results in two ways to grow your revenue. It increases your revenue per user and also increases the number of referrals. If you help your customers grow their business, they're more likely to stick around with you, even if your competitors have a newer and shiny feature. Think about it, it's like a marriage. How many of you, when you're married, if you're married there, you're not gonna go out, it's like, oh wow, that I'm gonna upgrade to 2.0 because you've decided to have that relationship and commitment, and you're not all of a sudden gonna leave your partner just because there's something newer and shinier out there. So if you really delight your customers on another thing, they'll tell their network about it. So that's it for this episode. I want to wrap up by asking you to support this podcast. This is a one-man podcast. I record, edit, and create all the marketing materials for this podcast. There are three ways to support. First, share a quote on Twitter or LinkedIn. Share this podcast. Go to growtoday.fm/51 and make it super easy for you. Tell a friend. Second, join the Grow Today tribe. You'll get the cheat seats directly. You'll get the Grow Cheat Sheets directly emailed to you. I also tell you who my next guests are, and I've created one for this, a step-by-step email onboarding strategy from Val. You take my notes, just steal it from me. You can get it at growtoday.fm/51, which will only be up until Tuesday, July 30th. And third, support me on Patreon with as little as $2 per episode starting in August. You get some amazing exclusive access. There is a 20 spot, actually there's only 19 spots left for an early adopter where you get all of my perks. A personal handwritten thank you note, stickers, I will mail that to you, early access to podcasts one day in advance, access to all my growth cheat sheets, access to private Grow Today Slack group, you can listen in live to podcasts once a month, and more. My goal is to raise $200 per episode so I can focus all my energy on finding more amazing guests and putting together smart questions from the community to ask them. You can go to patreon.com/growtoday. With that, I announced this week I have my first Patreon, Jamie Ward from Las Vegas. I want to thank you for being an early adopter. I appreciate it. And other than that, as always, keep on growing. Cash.